Well, it is certainly good to see so many out with us this morning. Good to have each one of you here. You will have your Bibles open to Esther chapter 4. We'll begin there again in just one moment. Do want to make mention of something that was omitted in the bulletin that I realized this morning I forgot to put in. As was mentioned Wednesday night, if you weren't here, Sister Pauline McCord recently fell at the nursing home. So she's recovering there, but is doing well. But I meant to put that in the bulletin in case you weren't here Wednesday night to hear about Sister Pauline. Our meeting is quickly approaching, just 2 weeks away from today. And so we need to be inviting others. We need to be doing whatever we can to make sure Brother Reynolds is going to be here and is going to do his part. I've talked to him. He's even already sent me an article for our bulletin that week. So he will have an article in our bulletin. I asked him for it, and 1 hour later I had it. I said, whoa, I don't do bulletins that fast. But he's already consented to do that, and he's looking forward to being here. We have added some new flyers that are on yellow paper. Linda, I was not using that orange you gave me. It's not using that orange color. So they're on this yellow paper. If you would like a colorful flyer to pass out, I just didn't want to burn anyone's eyes with the other one. This evening I'll make mention of a few things that we're doing in regards to bulletins and articles and different things, just to let you know some of the different things that we're doing online. And so we'll make mention of that just a little bit tonight before we actually start our lesson. But tonight we're going to talk about, over in Jeremiah chapter 6, there's a phrase that's talking about to ask for the old past. And so that's what we're going to talk about tonight. But this morning, you can label this one of our Bible characters or not. We are in the time of Queen Esther, but we are not actually looking at Queen Esther as in of herself. We're looking at the time of Queen Esther. Read with me again in Esther chapter 4, starting in verse 14. It says, "For if ye remain silent at this time, relief and deliverance will arise for the Jews from another place, and you and your father's house will perish. And who knows whether you have not attained royalty for such a time as this?" Then Esther told them to reply to Mordecai, "Go assemble all the Jews who are found in Susa, and fast for me. Do not eat or drink for 3 days, night or day. I have made my maidens also will fast in the same way. And thus I will go unto the king, which is not according to the law, and if I perish, I perish." So Mordecai went away and did just as Esther had commanded him. In verse 14, it ends with the phrase, "for such a time as this." When we look at our world today, we think we're in the worst times that have ever been. You listen to people talk, that's what they're going to say. What we're going to look at this morning is the times of Queen Esther. And what I mean by times of Queen Esther, there are different activities that are prevalent in this time period in the area that Queen Esther's in. There are different times of pleasure and times of joy and times of different ideas. And we want to see that really the time that Queen Esther was in is the same time we're in today. The same issues are still around. Matter of fact, some might say it was more prevalent then than it is now. And so that's what we really want to get at this morning. You know, when you think about problems, as they arise, someone has to be willing to solve a problem. That's what this is getting at here in Esther chapter 4. There's the problem that there's going to be this plot to kill the Jews, and someone's going to have to save the Jews. And as Mordecai points out, "You may have obtained royalty for such a time as this." Are you going to be the one to step up? But I want you to think about today. There are many ungodly problems that plague us today, right? I don't want to spend a lot of time on any of them as we get into them, because we're going to be talking about abortion as part of it. We're going to be talking about shootings and things like that. And it's easy for people to get on a soapbox, and I'm guilty of that. But what we want to see is, what sort of time is it that we're living in? What sort of time is it that Esther was living in? Because if you think about Romans chapter 15 and verse 4, what does it say? "For whatever things are written aforetime were written for our learning, that we through patience and comfort of the Scriptures might have hope." So that's what we want to get at this morning. The first time that we talked about, when we talked about Queen Esther, is she's living in a time when people had little to no respect for life. Over in Esther chapter 4, in verse 11, it says, "And all the king's servants and the people of the king's provinces know that for any man or woman who comes to the king to the inner court who is not summoned, he has but one law, that he be put to death unless the king holds out for him the golden scepter so that he might live. And I've not been summoned to come to the king for these 30 days." This is Esther talking. But you notice, if someone just simply comes to the king without an invitation, unless the king spares them, the rule is you kill them dead. Think about Wednesday night when we talked about King Herod. Slaughtered all the children, had his own son strangled, and at the time that he was about to die, called for about 200 men to be assembled in the courtyard, if we want to call it the courtyard, with the command that when he is dead, to kill him in order to quash any rebellion that might arise. Now that didn't happen. When the king died and the people did not perish. But you see, they didn't have a lot of respect for life either. Most rulers were so powerful and so ruthless that they cared very little about human life, unless it was their own. Over in Esther chapter 3, in verses 5 and 6, it says, "When Haman saw that Mordecai neither bowed down nor paid homage to him, Haman was filled with rage, but he disdained to lay hands on Mordecai alone, for they had told him who the people of Mordecai were. Therefore Haman sought to destroy all of the Jews, the people of Mordecai, who were throughout the whole kingdom of Ahasuerus." Haman's upset with Mordecai, so he decides, "I'm going to wipe out the whole Jews." Very little respect for human life. Very little care about people. You know, it's very parallel to, you could talk about where Hitler wanted all of the Jews and all the different ethnicities gone. And often we talk about that the most, but you know, there was also the Rwandan genocide. There were other genocides in Africa where certain peoples were to be killed because they were of a different ethnicity or a different culture. But maybe the biggest plague we have today is that since 1973, more than 60.5 million babies have been aborted. There's estimation that in the United States, 1.1 million abortions occur each year. There's a clock, abortionclock.org or something like that. Well, I went on this morning just to look at what the numbers were up to, and in the about minute or two that I stayed on the page, it said 88 abortions were estimated to have occurred worldwide. Because it's even a bigger problem in many other countries. Think about shootings. 2 school shootings in the last week? Is that right? 2? Texas and Indiana? Think about just shootings in general. How many murders happen in cities like even Nashville, Memphis, Chicago, Atlanta? Day by day, people do not respect human life. People do not care about human life. It's the same problem today as it was then, as it was 70 years ago, as it's been throughout history. People do not care about human life. You know, someone posted on Facebook the other day that it frustrates them when they see so many people who are advocating for the rescue of dogs. And please, I sympathize with that. But the same people don't care a bit about adoptions or about rescuing children. You know, there's been powerful statements made by those of the Democratic Party, and I'm going to tell you, they're right on. They are right on spot. You can't be pro-life without caring about taking care of them after they come into the world. Because it's more than just them being born. There is care that has to take place. If we're going to be pro-life, we have to be pro-adoption. We have to be pro-care. Because what you end up seeing is so many people defend the perpetrators. We're going to call it that, perpetrators. I'm not talking about gun control, but you'll see more people defend the person that holds a gun than you will see defend the ones who are shot. More people defend those who cause the actions than those who are taken by it. That is the same thing as no respect for human life. I'm not trying to get political this morning, but that's the simple basis of it. We want to say that we have respect for human life, then we have to show it in how we act, in what we do, in what we say, in what we support. Because we're in the same time as Queen Esther. Only now, it's not specific to a race. It's not specific to a certain people. It's just disrespect for human life, period. Another time we come to in Queen Esther is we see that pleasure was just generally a part of the day. What I mean by that is pleasure was more than something that is spontaneous. Pleasure was more than something that was enjoyed by private parties. Pleasure was something that was almost as if it was in the schedule of every day was to be pleasured. Look over in Esther chapter 1. In Esther chapter 1 in verse 8, it says, the drinking was done according to the law. There was no compulsion. For the king had given orders to each official of his household that he should do according to the desires of each person. Generally, the law told him, whatever you want to do, you do it. America is the same way. Over in Luke chapter 8 and verse 14, talking about the word as it being sowed, it says, now the ones that fell among the thorns are those who, when they have heard, go out and are choked with cares, riches, and pleasures of life and bring no fruit to maturity. You see, cares and riches and pleasures of life, they're still around. And in some people, it's still a very day-to-day thing. Whatever I want to do, I'm just going to go out and do it, and I'm going to live my life the way I want to live it. If every single person lived their life the way they wanted to, it would be utter chaos. Because if you could do whatever you want without any repercussions whatsoever, the world would be dead in 50 years. And that's one of those made-up statistics. I don't know exactly how long it would take, but it would be within one generation, easily. What's our mindset on? When we get down to it, how is our mind centered? Do we care more about God or do we care more about self-pleasure? We've talked about it. I think Bob mentioned it Wednesday night. When we talk about idols and something being before God, that's just simply what it is. It's anything before God. What I've been saying for weeks as we talk about idols when we look at the Old Testament. When we put anything before God, it's a pleasure, and pleasures then come before God. So are we living in the same time as Queen Esther? I think so. Many people around put many things before God. Many people in the Lord's church put many things before God. When we get wrapped up in pleasure, it's one of those things that ends up bringing down most empires. You look throughout history. Were empires brought down because they simply just weren't strong enough anymore? Most of the time, desire got into it. They got too greedy. And so they stretched themselves too far. They got mixed up with people who they pleasured themselves with. And in return, those people brought them down. You look at Israel's history. How many times did they intermarry with the different people of the land? And it often led to their demise. Led them away from God. Over to Matthew chapter 6 and verse 33, Jesus says, "But seek first the kingdom of God and His righteousness, and all these things will be added unto you." What we're getting at this morning, if you can't already tell, it's a bleak sermon. It's a bleak part of history. We're not talking about the best times of history. What else you see in the time of Esther, and I think is one of the most prevalent things we see today, is a time for divorce for whatever you want it to be. Over in Esther chapter 1, starting verse 17. "For the queen's conduct will become known to all the women, causing them to look with contempt on their husbands by saying, 'King Ahasuerus commanded Queen Vashti to be brought into his presence, but she did not come. This day the ladies of Persia and Media, who have heard of the queen's conduct, will speak in the same way to all the king's princes, and there will be plenty of contempt and anger. If it pleases the king, let a royal edict be issued by him, and let it be written by the laws of Persia and Media, so that it cannot be repealed, that Vashti may no longer come into the presence of King Ahasuerus, and let the king give her royal position to another who is more worthy than she." And you may say, divorce is not mentioned in those verses. Divorce simply means separating, disposing of, putting aside. And that's exactly what the king did to Queen Vashti. For the simple fact of she didn't come before him and please him as he requested. Think about Jesus' teachings on divorce. Matthew chapter 5, verse 32 says, "But I say unto you, whoever divorces his wife for any reason except for sexual immorality causes her to commit adultery, and whoever marries a woman who is divorced commits adultery." Matthew chapter 19 and verse 9, "And I say to you, whoever divorces his wife except for sexual immorality and marries another commits adultery, whoever marries her who is divorced commits adultery." It is simple as that. You can't find it in simpler text. It lays out how the marriage can end biblically. But yet today, you can go to the courthouse and say, "I don't love them anymore. I don't love her anymore," and you're granted a certificate of divorce. Marriage has been perverted. For a long time. It's not just new today. I see so many people online get bent up out of shape about marriage being perverted. And you know exactly what I'm talking about. Same-sex marriage. I tell you, I have a problem with people who talk about same-sex marriage and condone someone getting married for their fifth time and they don't have a right. Because one perversion is the same as the other in my book. Oh, it's in that book too. Sin is sin, period. Esther was in a time where marriage was perverted. So were we. Esther was also in a time of drinking or drunkenness, strong drink. Over in Esther chapter 1 again, verse 10 this time, it says, "On the seventh day when the heart of the king was merry with wine, he commanded Mehuma, Bistha, Harbona, Bigtha, Abagtha, Zethar, and Carcass, the seven eunuchs who served in the presence of King Ahasuerus, to bring Queen Vashti before the king with her royal crown in order to display her beauty to the people and the princes, for she was beautiful." Do you notice what it says in verse 10? When the heart of the king was merry with wine. He was drunk. He was intoxicated. But if you remember what we just read in verse 8, just a few moments ago, the drinking was done according to the law. In that time, it was fine to be drunk. I want you to think about what the Bible teaches us about what God's attitude is towards drinking. Even from the Old Testament in Proverbs chapter 20 and verse 1 says, wine is a mocker, strong drink is a brawler, and whoever is led astray by it is not wise. Over in Isaiah chapter 5 and verse 11, in one of the woes of Isaiah, he says, woe to those who rise early in the morning, that they may follow intoxicating drink, who continue until night, till wine inflames them. And over in 1 Peter chapter 4 and verse 3, for we have spent enough of our past time in doing the will of the Gentiles, when we walk in lewdness, in lust, drunkenness, revelries, drinking parties, and abominable idolatries. There are millions of alcoholics today in America. And there are countless who are killed by drunk drivers each year. It is an epidemic today. But it apparently was an epidemic then as well. More broadly, what we might say is it was a time of wickedness. In verse 7 of chapter 1, drinks were served in golden vessels in various kinds, and the royal wine was plentiful according to the king's bounty. What the king had gained from others. You think about other times in the Bible that are mentioned of men's wickedness. Genesis chapter 13 and verse 13, as we're going to see the destruction of this city next week. But the men of Sodom were exceedingly wicked and sinful against the Lord. Over in Proverbs chapter 11 and verse 10, when it goes well with the righteous, the city rejoices, and when the wicked perish, there is jubilation. There are many areas of our country where it's not safe to walk the streets. I think about my mom, who was born in Chicago and spent the first several years of her life there. My aunt married a man from part of Chicago where you don't want to be. And I can always remember Uncle Hector when family would go up to visit. If they took the wrong turn, a lot of times they ended up in that part of South Chicago. And if Uncle Hector found out, he said, you lock your cars, I'm on my way. But you didn't go anywhere until he got there. Because it was not safe for anyone to really be there. And he knew that if they kept on going, they were going to end up in even worse territory. Stop them while he could. Is it not sad that in the country that is described as the land of freedom, you can't even walk down some areas because it's not safe? Think about the times of the kings. If you appear before the king without being told, you're going to die. That was the mentality of the time period. Another time we might mention, it was a time of gross immodesty. Think about Vashti again. Queen Vashti, she was called upon to dance lewdly before men. Her husband was calling on her to compromise her modesty. We're in the period of immodest apparel because summer just arrived and pools just opened. The Bible teaches us that modesty is required to be pleasing to God. Over in 1 Timothy chapter 2, starting in verse 9. 1 Timothy 2, starting in verse 9. Likewise, I want women to adorn themselves with proper clothing, modestly and discreetly, not with braided hair and gold or pearls of costly garments, but rather by means of good works, as it is proper for women making a claim to godliness. Even in the church, people today are becoming more and more immodest. You see it in what people wear to church services. You see it in what they wear even outside of church services, but where they can be seen by others. It is immodest. Look over in 2 Peter chapter 2. 2 Peter chapter 2, starting in verse 14. Having eyes full of adultery that never cease from sin, enticing unstable souls, having a heart trained in greed, accursed children, forsaking the right way, they have gone astray, having followed the way of Balaam the son of Beor, who loved the wages of unrighteousness. As saints, we're to know how to act, because immodesty leads people away from God. It leads ourselves, but it also can lead others away from God. We need to go the extra mile to make sure we're properly clothed. And you know, I just want to say, oftentimes women are the ones that are guilty, or the women are the ones who are said to be guilty of immodesty, but men can be just as well. Let's not mistake that. We all need to go the extra mile to make sure that proper clothes are worn, that we're not immodest before others, and then immodest before God. Also in the time of Queen Esther was a time of pride over in Esther chapter 3, verses 5 and 6. When Haman saw that Mordecai neither bowed down nor paid homage to him, Haman was filled with rage. Remember this? Go to verse 14 then of chapter 3. Verse 14, a copy of the edict to be issued as law in every province was published to all the peoples so that they should be ready for this day. Haman's pride was injured because he thought he was this great person who needed to be bowed down to by Mordecai. Over in Proverbs chapter 16, verse 18, pride goes before destruction and a haughty spirit before a fall. Mark chapter 7, starting in verse 21, for from within, out of the heart of men, proceed evil thoughts, adulteries, fornications, murders, thefts, covetousness, wickedness, deceit, lewdness, an evil eye, blasphemy, pride, foolishness. All of these evil things come from within and defile a man. Pride, just like any other sin, begins in the heart. If we don't think that there's not a problem of pride today, look at your politicians. Look at a lot of your professional people. Everyone thinks that there's something big and tall and that they can't be knocked down. You know, we've looked at a lot of horrible things about that time. We've only got one more time we're going to look at. This morning, you may be feeling discouraged because when we think about the times that we're in, they are similar to Queen Esther, which we know Queen Esther and the Jewish nation made it through, so that could bring some encouragement to us, but when what we really talk about this morning, we talk about a lot of the problems of the world today. And that doesn't always make for what we might call best sermon material, but it's things that need to be taught and things that need to be said. But the final time we see in the life of Queen Esther, throughout all this, that is what we call a time of providence. Even throughout all that, God provided. In Esther chapter 6, during the night the king could not sleep, so he gave an order to bring the book of the records, the chronicles, and they were read before the king. God's name is not found anywhere in the book of Esther. You notice that it's not mentioned anywhere in the book of Esther. But His presence is seen everywhere. It's in history, it's in actions, it's in the people. Because what we really understand about God is, wherever His people are, that's where He is, so long as they are faithful to Him. God helped Mordecai and Esther. He helped the Jews. And it becomes pretty ironic because Haman ends up dying on the same gallows he prepared for Mordecai. God always provides when His people are in need. And so what we see is even though we're in a time of the same, we're in a time where there's no respect for life. I'm not going to name them all, but there's no respect for life, divorce for whatever you want, be prideful, be immodest. But if we persevere through it all, God will provide for us as well. And that's a home with Him when this life is over, if we're obedient unto Him. But the best lesson we actually learn from Esther is to understand that God is always in control. People say all the time, God must have forsaken us for all of this to be happening in the world today. It was happening all this many years ago, and God was there. We don't blame God for our problems. We instead act like Queen Esther. Do you understand the weight of the statement she made? I will go before the king, and if I die or if I perish, I perish. Because you remember what we read, anyone comes before the king without being called, unless he assumes it in the scepter, they're going to die. But she was willing to stand up and face the problem. And God provided for her. What does history say about our problems? Easiest answer, they've always been here, and they always will be. Because what problems get down to is not submitting wills to God. That's what it gets down to. What does history say about each of us? But even more importantly, what will Christ say about our effort in this life? John chapter 12, verse 48. He who rejects me and does not receive my words has that which judges him. The word that I have spoken will judge him on the last day. We're in a bleak time of history, absolutely. But every generation's been a bleak time of history. Because every generation has problems. Every generation has issues. What we find is our issues today are not any different than issues in the time of the Bible. And that's really a great lesson for us. Because we understand that it's happened before, but people were still faithful to God throughout it. You look at the time of Noah. Probably easily the bleakest part of human history, because only 8 souls lived. The rest were wicked. And so when we look at history throughout the Bible, while we've been studying Old Testament characters, it's for this very reason. They're not so much different than you and I. And their times are the exact same as ours today. We have cell phones, they don't. You know, that might actually be worse for us. There's things that change. But when you get down to the core problem, it's men's heart. And there are hearts that are just as hard as it was then. In the same regard then, God will provide for us today if we're faithful to Him. We have problems we face. We have people who need to stand up for it. I mentioned earlier about those who advocate for the animals and the animal shelters. Please don't think that I don't like animals. I do, as a matter of fact, my pets that we had in West Tennessee, my dogs, have all come from rescue. But it does pain me to see that so many people care more about a little animal than a little child. Because that little child may grow up to change the world. That little dog may keep us company for a time, but that's about it. You're here this morning,
As we talked about last week, we're at crossroads each and every day. We have decisions we must make. There are trials that are put in our way. There are problems, just as there were in the time of Esther. What we have to resolve to do is when we see problems that we can impact, we impact them. I'm not saying you go out today and you start advocating for the removal of Roe versus Wade, because I'm afraid that'll be here till I die. I understand we can't go and change the political scheme, but we can change individuals. We can change our local communities. We don't have to get very big with the picture. There's a lot of work we can do locally. But we have to stand up and we have to decide to do that work. If you're here this morning and you need to obey God because you've never obeyed Him before, then that's your greatest need right now. But if you have obeyed God, maybe you've gotten discouraged, maybe you've left Him, you can always come back to Him. You can always find encouragement in the Word of God and in your brothers and sisters. So if you're here this morning and you have need of anything, whether it be prayers or making your life right or obeying His will, we'll be glad to help you. We'd like to, if you'll only come forward as we sing the song that's been selected.